Hi, good evening, everybody. This is Parshas Bamidbar, and being that it's Erev Shavuos, so I want to discuss some halachos of Yom Tov. Now, although cooking is permitted on Yom Tov, we all know it's not permitted to use electricity, and it's not permitted to light a fire unless you're lighting from an existing fire. Now, therefore, if you're using an oven or a range on Yom Tov, so if it's a gas, the fire has to be on from before Yom Tov. In this case, it has to be on from before Yom Tov and Shabbos. Likewise, if it's electric, it has to be on from before. And similarly, when you light Neris, and you're planning on lighting Neris on Yom Tov both days, you need to light them from an existing flame. So if you have a gas range, that's easy. You just can light them from the gas range. But if not, you need to prepare a yahrzeit candle, which will burn long enough so that you can light your candles from that. So it's good to play it safe. Get yourself a 72-hour one. In addition, that it really, once it gets burns down to the bottom, it's very easy to put it out when you're trying to light another candle. So that's what we all need to do. Now, what happens if the yahrzeit candle goes out, which is unfortunately a very common occurrence? So what you need to do is get a light from a neighbor. Now, there are people, there are places that hold that if you have an electric range, obviously if you have a gas range, you can just light it from that fire. But if you have an electric range, some places can hold that it's permitted to hold a match to the range until it catches fire and then to use it for lighting. But many places can disagree, and they say that the electric range isn't really considered a fire, and therefore it's not called if you're lighting a fire from a fire. And therefore, they say it's usher. So it's better not to use that option and rather just use the light from the neighbor and do that balancing act of trying to get it from their house to your house without it going out. A good suggestion, by the way, is if you have a metal cup or like a metal Natilti Dime cup or something, you should cover the candle with that cup while you're working. It works wonders. Now, what's important to know, though, is that lighting a flame from nowhere, now it's not from a different flame, but just striking up a match, is not an Isser Min HaTaira. It's not a D'Araisa Isser. It's an Isser D'Rabbana. And that being the case, let's say your gas turns off, it blows out, or you can't get a light from a neighbor, it is permitted to ask a non-Jew directly to light a fire for you, either to light your range again or to, light your candle if necessary. The reason why that's mutter is because being that it's only drabbanan and what you need this for is a mitzvah, cooking or lighting candles, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew directly to light the fire. But that's the limit of what you can do. Now, one is not permitted to extinguish a fire on Yom Tov. This Isser is an Isser min hatayra. You're not allowed to extinguish a fire min hatayra on Yom Tov because the malacha of mechaba, of extinguishing fires, is not one of those things that are permitted on Yom Tov. So if you use a match to light your candles, let's say you stuck the match next to the yahrzeit candle, lit it, and then used it to light your candles, you can't blow out that match or put it out any other way. So you have to find a way to allow it to burn out on its own, and you also can't hasten the process of it burning out. So that could be a little complicated sometimes to try to find a way to put down that match without it directly going out. So the ideal way is not to use a match, but rather to use another candle to light the candles, which would be like a traditional candle, not a Neir Nib. And that's fine. You can light an additional candle, or it could be one of the candles you use anyway for Neiris Yom Tov, and they all contribute to Kavod Yom Tov, so that's not a problem. Now, one interesting application of the prohibition to extinguish or diminish a flame is during Havdalah. This year, we make Havdalah on the first night of Shavuos because it's Matzah Shabbos, and we make a bracha on the flame, Beri Mari Ha'esh, like we always do. Now, there's halacha that the bracha of Beri Mari Ha'esh has to be made on Avukah. Avukah means a torch, which means, practically speaking, a combination of two or more flames. Now, this presents a problem. Why? Because we don't want to light our usual Havdalah candle because we won't be able to extinguish it, and it'll burn down all the way. And the bigger problem is we have to find a place to put it while doing that, and we don't usually have a place to put a big Havdalah candle while it's burning down. So what do people do? Usually they take two candles they have from the Neiris, and they put them together, you know, provided that they're not Neronim. They put them together, and they make the bracha of Varamere Esh. However, Pais can take issue with that. Why? Because they say, holding them together at an angle, you take two candles and you angle them together, so then the combined effect of the two flames burning together, which is very hot, and also the fact that it's at an angle, causes wax to drip off very quickly from the candle, and that makes the fire burn out faster. You're removing the fuel. And that's also a form of mechaba. Removing fuel is mechaba, and if it's done on Shabbos, it's a melacha d'oraisa like anything else. So therefore, they have an issue with putting the two candles together. Now, not everybody has an issue with this. And the truth is that you can do it in a way that would avoid this problem. And the way would be is that you don't put the candles together until after you make the bracha. So you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Barer Merah Eish, and then you put the candles together for a second, watch, you know, to you look at your fingernails, and then take them apart. So generally, if you do it that way, you're fine. However, if you know, you have a big crowd and everybody's going to want to hold their fingers to the candle, so that's not such an option. So there's two other things. You, first of all, you can get yourself a specially devised candle from before Yontif. It's like a sort of a miniature Havdalah candle, which you wouldn't mind letting to burn out. They sell this product in some of the Judaica stores. They call it a Yaknahaz candle. Yaknahaz is the term for the kiddush that we make on Yontif that includes the Havdalah of Shabbos. So you can have a candle, some sort of a specially made candle. That's obviously an option. Or the truth is you don't have to combine the candles. You can make a Barer Merah Esh even if you don't combine the candles. So if in a situation where there are a lot of people that want to make Barer Merah Esh, rather, instead of putting the candles together, just hold them near each other, and that's fine, that's enough. Now, another more practical application of this halacha that you're not allowed to extinguish a flame on Yontif is when you have a gas range and you want to lower the flame on your range. And like we said before, diminishing a flame is the same as extinguishing a flame. So therefore, lowering the flame, which is essentially what you're doing, is you're removing gas, you're removing the fuel, is also also you're not allowed to do that on Yontif. So this could be an uncomfortable situation. Most people don't want to leave their gas flame on high for the rest of Yontif after they've cooked on it. It's not safe, and it generates a lot of heat and wastes a lot of gas. So there is a loophole, which is a leniency. So what you can do is, it's permitted to lower the flame if it will burn your food. That is one situation where mechaba is permitted on Yontif, that if the fire is burning your food, you're allowed to extinguish it somewhat. So if the flame is under a soup pot, so what you can do is, you can leave the soup pot on and then lower the flame to simmer. So now you've lowered it in order that it doesn't burn your soup. And then you remove your soup when you need it. So this way you've effectively diminished the flame in a way that it's mutter. You've diminished the flame for the purpose of not burning your food, and then it's permitted. And this way, you know, you'll have the flame low by the time you're done, instead of being stuck with a high flame. I want to speak this week, Parshat Bamidbar, on the topic of what's a woman's portion in learning Torah. So when we approach the Yontif HaShavuos, we might wonder, what's the woman's role in Limud HaTorah, in the learning of Torah? Last year, I remember speaking, I think, by the Shal Shudas before Shavuos, and I discussed what our approach to the Yontif itself. Amir Hashem, my wife this year, will expand on this point on Shabbos. But I'd like to discuss what's the woman's portion in actually learning Torah itself. Now, we know that the Torah obligates men to learn Torah, and doesn't obligate women to learn Torah. The Shinantam Levanecha, and not Levanecha. There's a obligation for a man to learn, and there's no obligation for a woman. Yet, we also know that every man and woman makes a bracha in the morning, the bracha on the Torah. Asher Kedishan B'mitzvayisav, B'tzivanu Lasik B'divayisav. So why is that? Why do women make that bracha? So the Pais can say the reason why women make that bracha is because the women are obligated to learn Torah, because everybody needs to know how to keep the Torah. And there's no way you'll know the mitzvahs of the Torah without learning Torah. So everybody has that obligation to learn Torah, to know the mitzvahs, to know the halachas, halachas Shabbos, halachas Lashon Hara, halachas Yontif, and etc. So therefore, everybody makes a bracha of Berachas HaTorah. So then what is the difference between men and women in regard to learning Torah, if women are indeed obligated to learn Torah to know what to do? So the answer is that there's two parts to learning Torah. One part is Lilmaid Almanas Lafis. We learn in order to be able to keep the mitzvahs. Everybody is obligated in this part of Limud HaTorah. Everybody has to learn all the mitzvahs, learn all the halachas, everything that they need to do. This is an obligation that's a universal men and women. However, there's a second part to Limud HaTorah. That part is learning just for the sake of learning itself. Learning Torah just to know Torah, just to toil in Torah. This aspect of Limud HaTorah, only men are obligated. Women aren't obligated to learn about a cow goring another cow. They aren't obligated to learn about intricacies in Hilchos Chaysh and Mishpat of the financial transactions that don't apply to them. They have no obligation to do that, whereas men are obligated to learn every part of the Torah that they're able to, just for the sake of knowing the Torah itself. The Beis HaLevi says, and he brings a source to this from the Zohar, that this is what Nasa V'Nishma means, that the Klal Yisrael said Nasa, we'll do the Torah, and then they said, V'Nishma, we will hear the Torah. And the Gemara says that this was a tremendous accomplishment that Klal Yisrael did by saying we will do before they said we will hear. So he explains what this means is that the first statement of Nasa also refers to learning Torah. And what it means is we will learn Torah in order to keep the Torah. Nasa means we will learn everything we need to do the mitzvah. The second statement, Nishma, is after that. After you've already done learning the Torah in order to be able to keep the Torah, the second statement, Nishma, means we will learn the Torah for the pure sake of hearing Torah, knowing Torah for the Torah's own sake. Now here's where the interesting part is. Because the Medrash says that both men and women said Nasa v'Nishma. Vayanu kol ha'am yachtav. Everybody said Nasa v'Nishma, men and women together. So apparently, the part of Torah which involves incessant learning, which involves being away from home at key times, which involves the men, somehow is seemingly the portion of women as well. And here's where it gets really interesting. The Medrash in Pirkei Reb Elazar, the 40 Perek Mem Aleph, says an amazing thing. It says, Hashem told Moshe to ask the women first if they will accept the Torah. Why? Because the men will follow whatever the women choose. And that's why it says first in the command that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe to present this choice of accepting the Torah to Klal Yisrael, it says, Klal Yisrael Yimar LeBeit Yaakov, first address the house of Yaakov, which Rashi says refers to the women, the Sagad LeBnei Yisrael, and then retell this to Bnei Yisrael, which refers to the men. So Moshe Rabbeinu was advised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ask the women first because their decision will be the decision. Their decision will call the shots. The men will follow suit. Then the Medrash says, both the men and the women answer simultaneously, Nasa v'Nishma, and the Medrash supports this from Pasuk in Tehillim. So this is fascinating. We see an amazing thing. The actual learning for the Torah, of the Torah for its own sake, the concept of Nishma, it's true, only the men are obligated to do the learning. But apparently, the women are obligated too. And how is that? So the answer is, the women are obligated to facilitate the learning. And more than that, the women apparently, as we see from this Medrash, are the sole reason why that yoke was accepted in the first place. Hashem said only through the women accepting this obligation will the men follow suit. Now, why is that? So I think you can use this analogy to understand. Now, there are many books written about management. All types of ideas, tactics, how to inspire and energize people working under you. They're discussed, they're debated. However, there's one thing about management which is clear. Everybody agrees, and that is, what is the role of management? Is the role of the manager to do the job? No. His job is to empower the people under him to do their job. I think, for example, in a company, say especially a large, successful company, there are many tiers and levels, right? So there are the lowest level customer service people. They sit behind a computer, they have a phone, and they get paid minimum wage to answer the phones and answer questions from a script in front of them. Then there are their managers who get paid a little bit more because they're more knowledgeable. Then there's the people who work on the product development, advertising, the law, etc., managers. so on and so forth, a whole chain of command, and on the top of this chain is the CEO. And what's he responsible for? To make sure everybody's doing their job. He takes responsibility and at the same time takes the lion's share of the credit for whatever the company is successful at. Now, what would happen if the CEO goes down to the customer service floor and sees the phone is ringing and the person is not by his phone, he's by the coffee machine schmoozing. So what does he do? He sits down and he starts answering the phone for the next hour. Now, that would not only be a criminal usage of his time, he would also be compromising what his job is. His job is not to do the job of other people. His job is to empower the people whose job it is to do their work. We see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, address the women, and the women will call the shots, and the men will follow suit. Women aren't helping their husbands learn. They are rather the sole reasons that their husbands are learning in the first place. A man's inspiration and energy to learn Torah today, as it was then, comes from his mother and then from his wife. Without that inspiration, he won't truly dedicate himself to learning. He won't be authentic nishma. He'll be a business running without a manager. Therefore, both parts of learning Torah are the domain of women. One part of learning Torah, they're equal as the men. They need to do it because they need to keep the Torah. Everybody needs to keep the Torah, women, men together. We need to keep the Torah, learn the Torah to know what to do. But in the other part of the Torah, when it comes to the learning of the Torah, the women manage and facilitate it, and the men carry it out. And the portion is the same. The business is one. It's different jobs, and every person needs to be at his job. Hillel Apian, Zatzal, and then the Parashas Kisavo, says a fascinating point built on this. He says that the same way there's an obligation on men of the Hakisaba Yayma Balaila, a man has to learn Torah day and night, he has to toil in Torah throughout the day and throughout the night, whenever he has time. He says, likewise, there's an obligation on women to facilitate learning Torah through the day and through the night. He says, a woman as a man, the way a man is supposed to, have learning on his mind all day and all night, trying to find a time when he could learn and see to it that he can get to learning and try to learn and think about his learning. A woman has to have that on her mind also day and night. How can she facilitate the learning Torah in this world? How can she get her husband to go to learn a Seder, and how can she get her children to be inspired to learn? To learn? What management practices can she implement so that she gets the job done? And there's this last point, and the Tziv says, a wonderful Nakuda, he says that a woman's chelik in Torah, he says, is shalem, is whole. When a man actually goes to learn, he wastes time, or he doesn't waste time. If he learns this, totally uses all the time, that's his issue. The woman, by sending him off to learn, the woman, by energizing him to learn, the woman, by inspiring him to learn, gets the full portion of Torah regardless. Regardless of what actually happens, a woman will get the full portion of Torah by inspiring the man and doing her job, having her portion in the Torah, the two halakim of the Torah, both the nafsa chelik of the Torah and the nishma chelik of the Torah. May we all be zeichah together to have a true Kabbalah of Torah and to enjoy this yantiv that's coming on us, upon us, the yantiv of Shavuos. Everybody should have a good night, a good Shabbos, and a good yantiv.